What's kind of been the investor demand in, have you, that you've seen from XRP? Is it different than Sol? Is it similar? Is there a lot or is there a little? Like, give us a rundown if you can.
Well, I think to some extent we're going to be seeing that over the next few months as the market starts to digest this digital asset in ETF form. But I would say, broadly speaking, the thing that we've heard over and over again over the past few years is people saying to us they want access to digital assets as a category because they're still trying to learn what these different things are and what they do. And it's less intuitive than other technologies that people invest in. You know, I heard somebody say to me, well, you know, DeFi is like the app store. It's like, okay, yeah, but like the app store people get, like they have their phone, they know what it is. Whereas this other stuff, maybe they've not worked with a wallet, they don't have, their experience isn't quite the same way. So I think a lot of investors right now are still looking at digital assets as a category. And the number of investors and the advisor clients that we talk to every day, the investment advisor clients, who know they need an allocation, but are concerned because they don't know which one, drives people to the same kind of heuristics they use for investing in the equity market, which is, let's go for the large cap names. Let's go for the ones that seem to have the broadest reach. Let's make sure we cover the ground across all of the different ones to the extent that we can within the brokerage accounts that we're using and what's tradable on the markets, you know, through ETFs, which, you know, means that like XRP is now like a new member of that club, right? Having been, you know, the most recent digital asset to be granted ETF status here in Canada. And I think we're ahead of a lot of other jurisdictions with this ETF. And so that in and of itself is the investment case that then people start from, and then they say, okay, so I can buy it. That's good. Must mean that things are, you know, like now I'm willing, you know, I'm interested, like tell me more about it. And then you get into the conversation around, okay, well, this is like cross-border payments, right? So the way that like Bitcoin is digital gold, XRP is like digital Swift or digital Fedwire or whatever your favorite cross-border method that costs you. You know, way too much money to send money way too slowly from one side.
There's probably not a favorite one.
No, there's no favorite. There's no like, hey, this is like Swift. You know how much you love Swift? This is like Swift in your pocket. Nobody likes that. Like sending wires is the bane of the existence of anybody who's ever had to do it. And most people, the average person probably has only sent stuff once in a while. They've gone to their bank. The teller had to type a small novel onto their keyboard to get this stuff set up. And then they go and they're like, I'm sending $100 to some country to buy something from them. And then they're like, yeah, okay, that'll be like $40 to send a wire. And then people like fall over with the cost and it's slow and everything. So I think but it's an easy conversation because people get why you need something better. And so therefore you've got like a nice solid use case. Like, why does XRP exist? What's the problem it's trying to solve? You know, that thing that people love to ask entrepreneurs. And I think if you ask XRP, what's the problem you're trying to solve? You know, it's very much, let's move assets around the world faster and more easily than value has been moved before. And that's the use case for XRP. Now, there's a lot of other technical detail you can get into and things like, you know, RippleNet and how you can use that and their liquidity hub information, all those sorts of things. And that's all great, but most people don't get to that level. They just want to know, okay, it's like solving this problem, that's good. Okay, it's a significantly large size digital asset, that's good. It's in an ETF, that's great. Okay, I'll add it to my allocation for digital assets.
You're listening to CFB Talks Digital Assets, the home of informed conversation about crypto for institutions building the future of finance, brought to you by CF Benchmarks, the world's largest crypto index provider. Hey everybody, thanks for joining us for another episode of CFB Talks Digital Assets. I'm Ken O'Delliger, Head of Content, and as usual, I'm joined by my colleagues, Gabe Selby, who's Head of Research, and Mark Pilipchuk, who's our Research Analyst. Gentlemen, thank you for joining us.
Good to be here, Ken.
Yep, thanks, Ken.
Today, I think I mentioned recently in one podcast, you know, we always had a particularly interesting and exciting time when we could go back to our roots and have a guest who is from the investment management industry. And so even more so when it's a guest who probably is the chief investment officer of our first investment management client, CF Benchmark's first investment management client. That is Elliot Johnson, CIO and COO of Evolve ETFs. So Elliot, we are so stoked you can join us.
Thanks, Ken. Great to be here. Good to see you, Mark and Gabe.
And the reason why we have Elliot with us today is because Evolve has obviously got a long track record of crypto ETFs, having listed its first one in 2021. But the pace seems to have accelerated in recent years. Having listed the Ether ETF, they now have also a Solana ETF, which was listed earlier this year with staking. And the most recent ETF that they have listed is actually the XRP ETF, ticker XRP, and also XRP.U, I believe for the US dollar units. So obviously we're going to talk about that, but clearly for someone with such a long track record and experience, and as we were saying earlier, basically a crypto OG as well, there's so many other things we can sort of discuss. So we're going to get into some of the broader issues and topics of the space as well. So, Elliot, one of the better ways to start is talk about your recently listed Solana ETF. Why did you go for Solana as your latest product after the other sort of assets that you listed as well? Why Solana at this stage?
Yeah, so we're focused on trying to bring the bigger digital assets to the marketplace through ETFs. And so we now have Bitcoin, Ether, Solana, and XRP. And that covers about 80% of the total aggregate market cap of digital assets that are out there. And so this is about bringing to market to investors through an ETF that they can hold in their brokerage accounts, digital assets that are obviously the most relevant from an investment perspective. And that's, no different than a market cap weighted index, which would do very much the same thing, kind of give you the biggest stocks in a particular stock market. So that was certainly the impetus for why Solana next. As you mentioned, we launched Bitcoin and Ether in 2021. So it had been a while. And that was as much the market conditions as it was, again, trying to continue to work with our regulators here in Canada to be able to bring these products into ETF format. It may sound easy, but it's certainly not easy to get approvals. We follow the news in other jurisdictions as well. Obviously, the US principally being the one that we're interested in outside of Canada. Canada always seems to get here first. I think we've got a very open-minded regulatory framework and regulator here in Canada. But that doesn't mean we get to have whatever we want whenever we want it. It took us 4 years from filing for Canada's first Bitcoin ETF until we were actually able to get EBIT, our Bitcoin ETF, launched in February 2021, partnering with CF Benchmarks at the time. And that was a huge success for us. And it did, as I said, it took 4 years to get there. I was very pleased that Solana only took us 3 years. So then that's, a 25% improvement on time. So that was great. But, I'm joking because, XRP, we had not been working on for many years, but we were able to get there quite quickly. So it varies. It certainly depends on a variety of different conditions. But we are once again in a position where we have Solana and we have XRP, which is great for Canada. It's great for any investor who can buy the Canadian stock market. And the reception has been strong. I mean, I think people looking for digital assets are very increasingly happy that the ETFs exist as their preferred vehicle for investing for those who don't want to, buy the stuff themselves, hold it in their own wallets and those other kinds of things, why they would use an ETF.
Can you give us a bit of the color for the Solana ETF? And how do you talk to investors who are new to the space, who may, they may have already invested in Evolve's Bitcoin ETF or maybe the Ether ETF, but how do you talk to them, who are new to the space about the staking aspect? Because it seems to bring in mind, knowing how it works, even, in the sort of like in the crypto space, very, very involved, complex process. How do you bring that on board into the traditional investment space? How does it work as a CIO?
So I like analogies. I think, this is why Bitcoin is digital gold. And then people are like, okay, I think I know what it is. And so staking, I say, look, it's like securities lending. Now, that doesn't always resonate with everybody, because if you're not an investment fund manager, you might not really know what that is. But it's at least a starting point for people who might have heard of that to say, we are able to generate more Solana with the Solana that we bought in the fund. And the process is staking. And all staking is that it's a way in which you can grow your Solana or get a yield on your Solana. And then that can kind of start to help to explain what that means, because it's not really that different than like buying a treasury bond ETF. Like I have a treasury bond ETF as well, and it's great. It's a very big fund. But aren't we just staking dollars to generate more dollars? Like, isn't it just a US dollar staking ETF? Like, kind of, right? It's basically exactly the same thing. So, I know it's a little bit different. There's no counterparty risk with staking, but again, one of the many benefits of digital assets. But I think when you analogize things like that, it becomes a fairly easy conversation. And then people can say, oh, well, that's interesting. What's the yield on the staking? And then you can talk about the yield on the staking. And they say, oh, that's really interesting. So you're telling me that, like, you know, you're going to take this and you're going to generate more Solana by staking the Solana. And then that yield's going to, you know, pay for the fund costs and mean I've got more Solana at the end of the year than I had when I started on a per unit basis. Great. Okay. Like that's though you have those conversations and then you say, and we're going to, you know, we're just transparent. We can see what the yield is, go to our website and these kinds of things. And then people get comfortable knowing that this is a little bit different than just buying the asset itself because you're doing something productively with it. So those are the kinds of things that we talk about when we're trying to get people there. Because I think a lot of the terminology is very new to people, yeah, right? They hear staking and then they're not sure. And then they're asking, yep, is that DeFi? And you're like, well, it doesn't have to be. And then, you know, it's like all of those kinds of conversations. And, you know, yeah, you start pulling on this thread and you kind of get a sense of like, what does somebody know or not know? And I mean, you know, it's like what we're doing is all very institutional grade. I mean, it's like, you know, from a plumbing perspective, I love it, but it's not that exciting when you really get into the details.
Yeah, I think that when we look at staking, it's still a relatively novel idea. I mean, we're privileged because we're in the industry, and so we've been around that term for a long time. And certainly we like to use any sort of analogy really to bridge that knowledge gap from the two different worlds, the folks over on the traditional finance side to what we're doing here with crypto. But maybe now would be a good time to kind of go into a little bit of the nitty-gritty of staking. If you can, maybe you could share kind of how does Evolve balance some of the risks of, you know, harvesting some yield, generating rewards with managing things like liquidity. You know, maybe we could talk a little bit about how that works in a fund where you have create redeems and other things like, you know, so some of the risks that maybe some folks aren't aware of.
Yeah, for sure. So first of all, we only stake 50% of the Solana, and we could stake less, but that's the level that we're setting it at. So we don't stake all the fund assets. The other reason that we like Solana from a staking perspective is that the unbonding period, which is when you want to unstake some to get it back from being staked, is a 3-day window. And that window doesn't move based on how many other people are trying to unstake. And this is a nuanced difference between Solana and some of the other cryptocurrencies like Ethereum. But it's relevant when you're running a daily liquid ETF, because you always want to make sure you can meet an investor redemption, because you don't know any given day. Some investors might come in and say, I'm selling my fund because I want to take the money and do something else. And they need to get their money back. They can't be sitting around waiting for you, say like, oh, hang on a second, I got to unstake something. I'll see you, you know, in a few weeks. That doesn't work. So you have to make sure liquidity is the number one most important thing. So we actually take of the 50% that we can stake, we actually chop it up into smaller chunks that we stake as individual amounts. And we work with Coinbase, who is our custodian for the fund, that runs all their own staking infrastructure. So that means the validator machines that are on the Solana network that are helping to validate that you were putting your Solana into in order to get the staked rewards, all of that infrastructure is run by Coinbase. So it's all exactly the same security infrastructure. It never leaves the custodian and goes somewhere else. It's all being operated exactly the same with the same security management and all of the. So that means all of our operational due diligence applies to staking as much as that applies to the custody piece itself, right? So we get SOC 1 and SOC 2 reports from Coinbase and the other digital custodians we work with every year. You know, they're audited, right? We are heavily audited. So all of this stuff is very transparent. And as we got into staking for the first time, we were working with our auditor, EY, to make sure that they were comfortable with what they were seeing on screen. So if they look into Coinbase's system, they can see what's staked where. They're comfortable with the reporting that shows us the staking rewards and when they're coming in. We get, you know, that stuff comes in every day. You can see how much you're getting back in the yield, so to speak. So this is, I mean, I again, at risk of boring the audience here, this is not the stuff that you do as an asset yeah, manager, which yeah, is you focus on very dry operational due diligence, security due diligence, making sure the infrastructure is going to work, making sure that the amount you're staking is not going to cause you a liquidity problem. The reason we chop it into smaller chunks is so that if we were to get some redemptions in the fund, we can immediately activate the unbonding 3-day window for one or two of the chunks to get ourselves back in balance with the amount that we want to stake if the fund is getting smaller. Similarly, if the fund starts growing, we can just then stake another chunk of it, stake another chunk, and then our team can manage that on our side appropriately. But, you know, when you come back to like, why do you buy an ETF? Like, why do you buy a fund, right? It's because you're hiring a bunch of people to do something that, yeah, you could do yourself, but it's time consuming and you want to be sure that you've operationalized it and you want to make sure it's being done professionally. You want to make sure it's consistent. And that's why we have a team. And I think it's the best team in the industry who are doing this stuff at Evolve. And we are supported by our auditor and we're supported by our digital custodians. And that's why people hire us via buying our funds to do this stuff for them. But how great is it that we're here? Because we're talking about something that until, you know, not long ago, wasn't even, you know, didn't exist. You could stake your Solana, but you had to do it yourself and you had to have your own wallet and you had to, you know, all of those things. So we've come a long way, and that's because of infrastructure like our custodian has that helps us out with that.
Yeah. And those Solana validators too are interesting from an ETF perspective, because these ETFs are holding more and more of the digital asset supply. We're seeing the Bitcoin ETFs in the US closing in on 1 million Bitcoin now. And now we have a bunch in Ethereum and Solana. And these can really provide some excellent support to those networks too, in terms of decentralization, if you're running all of those separate validators and everything too, right?
Oh, absolutely. And look, these are participants who are, you know, I think it's good to have heavily regulated large institutions participating in these networks, as much as I think it's super important that there are individuals as well, right? You know, people should be doing this themselves. I have a small BitAx miner on my desk at home that generates like 12 cents a month in Bitcoin from home mining. But at least I'm participating, and, you know, yeah, it's kind of fun to play with that. You know, yeah, I run a node and those kinds of things, but that's just a hobbyist thing so that I can understand the technology. When it comes down to it, as an asset manager, you want to rely on good third-party relationships with people who are really, you know, building that infrastructure in an industrial-grade way. And this is a story I told a lot of people back in 2021 when we finally launched our fund and we were able to get to the market and working with CF Benchmarks. It's that the, you know, when you look at the infrastructure that's had to be built around digital assets, it needed to get built in order for us to be able to have these products, right? So CF Benchmarks, just to kind of credit you and your team with what you're doing for the industry, you're the reference rate for the futures on the CME. And the CME futures market is required in order for us to have ETFs. Certainly in Canada, the regulators look to that as a signal that those assets are okay to be launched. And so Solana and XRP really got going once we saw the announcement that there would be futures on the CME. That was a big, big deal up here. Everybody's looking at that. And that big deal is the reason why we're able to have ETFs, because it allows the market makers for the ETFs to hedge their exposure using futures. It also allows the liquidity providers that we buy and sell Bitcoin, Ether, Solana, and XRP with to be able to give us the reference rate. Our funds are tied to the CME CF Benchmarks reference rates because they can use the futures market to hedge their exposure when they're going to go and buy those assets to sell to the fund. And it gives us price certainty, which is, of course, what futures do. But before there were the futures, you couldn't have built the ETFs. Like, you could, but you wouldn't have had any kind of ability to have price certainty, which means that they would have been like an active ETF and nobody would have really known what it held on any given day. But frankly, we couldn't, because no regulator was going to sign off on an ETF that doesn't have a kind of established third party reputable pricing source to use as your nav point. So these things that are infrastructure that I love as somebody who likes to build investment products have been required for us to have these digital assets in an ETF. And it's what's taken crypto from being something that people would play with in their basements on their computers into something that's now like an institutional grade asset class. So it's a pretty big deal. And congrats to you guys. And thanks for everything you've done for the industry as well.
We appreciate it. Evolve really was CF Benchmark's first investment management client. As much as we love our indices and we know that they are as solid and as clockwork and accurate as we claim them to be, proof of concept in real life is actually an important thing. So, you know, for a sort of sentimental reasons, which I don't think are just isolated to myself, but also for operational and, you know, sort of conceptual reasons, Evolve is an extremely important part of the CF Benchmark story. And I hope CF Benchmark is an extremely important part of the Evolve story.
Oh, yeah.
Moving things right to the present moment, you've just launched an XRP ETF. And I know Gabe is a fan of ticker game, and you guys have managed to grab the XRP ticker, which is just amazing. Second best favorite after EBIT, which I love because for what it stands for. So yes, the tickers are on the Toronto Exchange, XRP, I believe that's for the Canadian dollar units, is that?
Yeah.
And then XRP.U, following the tradition, for the US dollar denominated units. XRP, the latest asset, you're offering it out to clients. What do you say to your clients who are already clients with holding EBIT and also Ether, ETHR, the Ether ETF? What do you say to them about, and maybe Sol and Solar, what do you say to them about XRP that broadens their viewpoint enough to actually get them interested in another asset in this ecosystem?
Yeah, so it's a couple of things. First of all, it's actually in some ways, an easier way to distinguish XRP from Ether and Solana, where Ether and Solana kind of have the same sort of use case to some extent, right? You know, talk about tokenized assets, talk about building DeFi applications. They're similar to each other. XRP is distinguished by being really built for cross-border payment efficiency. And so being able to say, listen, it extends the story, right? I mean, the big picture story we've been telling now for almost 5 years since we launched EBIT is the stuff that you know in traditional finance is becoming digitized, right? You know, some people like to say it's dematerializing into these protocols that are known as cryptocurrencies. And so digital gold has been a story we've told about Bitcoin for a long time. And I think people are starting to kind of get that. But when you actually get somebody really thinking about the financial services infrastructure around the world, what does it mean to send payments across from one country to another? What does it mean to carry currency of one country or currency of another country? It isn't a very long conversation to point out how inefficient things are, how slow they are, how costly they are, how prone to error they happen to be. And I mean, anybody who's ever sent money overseas knows that it's an awful experience. And if you run an asset management company and you're sending wires every day, as we are, that's a waking nightmare that exists every single day, because you've got to send all these wires around. And some of them just aren't, you have to chase them down for whatever reason. And nobody's really at fault. And nobody can really be sure why once in a while a wire doesn't show up and you have to go chase after it. But what's at fault is you're talking about infrastructure that is decades old, that isn't built for today's day and age. And like, it shouldn't be possible for us to be able to have this webinar where we're in at least three different countries by my count, talking on the internet in real time, sharing this then with people in, I'm sure, even more countries to listen to, sending email at the speed of light. And yet it's going to cost me like $40 and take 3 days. And maybe the money I send from Toronto can get to South Africa, but maybe not. And then I have to go chase after it. Like, it's ridiculous. And so XRP is just, you just tell that story and then you say, oh, but there's also this protocol and it's called XRP and it's a cryptocurrency and it's built for seamless instant payments. And as every country kind of comes onto the network and has a liquid local market, you can send on one, receive on the other. And then people are like, okay, I kind of get why you want that. It's like Western Union, except that it's not, doesn't cost me an arm and a leg. And it's like, that's right. And so it's all part of the same story. And what I love about it is it's another one to talk about, right? It's another example to talk about that, again, wakes people up to the fact that this is what's happening. This is what this asset class is all about. And again, like, if you live in your small world in your own country, and I don't mean that to offend anybody, but if you only live inside your own country and you only operate in your own economy and you're lucky enough to be in a developed Western nation, go ahead and ignore these advances in digital assets because you probably don't need them yet for yourself. But there are a lot of people in the world for whom this stuff is actually a meaningful improvement to their lives. And so that's the story. And I think, therefore, you say, listen, and so this is another big one. And, you know, if you line this up with EBIT, Ether, and Solana, you've now got 80% coverage of the crypto universe by market cap. And I'm not predicting price or anything else or adoption rates or whatever, but this is the direction of travel. And you can start to use this in client portfolios. And that's really the conversation that we have.
It's cool to hear your takes on the narratives. And certainly we know how well the analogy of store of digital gold, store of value is for Bitcoin. The narrative for Solana and Ether have kind of a similar shape, what you were saying as far as building these programmable blockchains that will help facilitate that transition to Web 3.0. And then XRP, which is the cross-border transaction darling that we are all interested in. So I think it would be really cool to turn the page, at least switch gears, and talk a little bit about all these tokens together in a basket. How do you see advisors, how do you see their allocation behavior changing from perhaps allocating into individual tokens, whether it's like a flagship one like Bitcoin, into a broader basket? Do you think that they're going to be so sophisticated to where they're going to be doing some satellite positioning with some of these smaller tokens, or maybe taking some active bets and overweighting some? Or do you think this is just going to be more of like a set it and forget it type play for asset allocators?
Yeah, so our multi-crypto ETF, the ticker is ETC and ETC.U for US dollar class, is really for the set it and forget it asset allocator to say, I've got the, you know, digital asset allocation over here, 80% by market cap across four different digital assets. And, you know, and for those of you who don't know about that fund, CF Benchmarks, who we're so happy to partner with, gives us free float market cap information. And that's the information we're using for the asset allocation inside the fund. And it's super important because anybody can go to, you know, a website and try to guess at like what the relative sizes are for these different digital assets. But CF Benchmarks is looking at the actual free floated supply, which means the supply that's really available for investment. So it's backing out things like lost coins and stuff that is technically part of the supply, but we kind of all know is no longer around, to come up with a much more accurate representation of the market. Because that's when you're doing market cap weighting of anything, you actually want to say, I'm going to let the market vote with their money for where my weight should be within the portfolio, right? And so it's important to make sure that that signal is strong in order to get the right kind of weights of one to another. So working with CF Benchmarks on that fund, I think also, you know, significantly improves the quality of it compared to other people who are out there doing similar things, but taking a different approach to how they're deciding the weights. And so it is very much a turnkey. You have an allocation to the industry with one ticket. That's great for people who just say, I know I need digital assets. I don't know enough about them. I'm just learning about them. Okay, well, we'll go get this fund over here. We'll get four of them. Maybe then we start our journey of learning more. And then sometimes people then, you know, they go down the rabbit hole and they end up, I mean, I'm guilty of this, becoming a Bitcoin maxi. And they then say, well, I'm going to maybe add some EBIT to my allocation because I now appreciate what Bitcoin is. Like that really has kind of worked for me. But for us, it's very much the case that people are doing it to get an allocation. And I would say, just to kind of point out where people are, everybody's in their different journey on their understanding of this new asset class, right? It's not like equities that have been around since before any of us, where you kind of entered into something and you could learn all about it. Like we're all sort of learning together. But no less so the advisors that are out there who are trying to figure out how to use digital assets in client accounts, right? I think the number of advisors who think they can ignore the asset class is diminishing on a very rapid basis. People now are in the category of either I'm using digital assets or I know I need to use digital assets as an investment allocation within my portfolios. Much like people would say, I need stocks and bonds. I need an allocation to gold. I need some, you know, maybe some oil and some other things. Like people look at the world that way, right? But I think what happens a lot, and I'm so happy you guys do these webinars, is people have anxiety because they're anxious about things they don't know, and there's a lot of jargon, and it feels a bit like trying to understand, you know, your teenager's explanation of their social media apps, and you just, it's like, what are you talking about? And I don't know. I can't snap you. I don't have that. Like, you know, that kind of thing happens, right? So I think sometimes people feel that way about crypto. And so having something that's turnkey is great. having something that's turnkey where we got some clear investment cases for each of the things in there. There aren't that many that it's too hard to kind of get your head around, gets you started on the journey. Then people can come to the Evolve website, evolveets.com, and get more relevant educational information, some of which we've partnered with CF Benchmarks on to actually go on a deeper dive into each of these digital assets. They can listen to webinars and podcasts like this, and we can kind of, people then start to kind of learn a little bit more and get a bit more familiar. So that, I think, is less daunting than a single asset. With a single asset, it's like, well, I could get it wrong. Whereas then it's much easier to talk to a client and say, we're going to make a bet on the category. I mean, still, you know, digital assets often kind of come and go together in the same bull bear cycles, but people are more comfortable. And so we're really excited about XRP and Sola this year, our Solana ETF, because they've improved our multi-crypto ETF, which means that by adding them in there, that fund has become more valuable to the people who are using it. So it's been a really exciting year for us to add those extra digital assets to that portfolio.
So when it comes to these multi-asset ETFs and people allocating into these, are you seeing more people coming from the discretionary kind of retail accounts allocating in, or is this something that more for advisors or endowments or pensions that are interested in that?
It's not really on the pension and institutional side yet. Mm-hmm. I think that those investors tend to take longer to make an allocation to something that's less familiar, but they'll get there eventually. A lot of it's advisors. We spend a lot of time at Evolve with advisors in Canada. That's where our relationships are really strong. And, you know, as Ken mentioned up front, we got lots of other investment funds at Evolve. So we're talking to them about lots of things and not just crypto, which is good because it gives them, you know, other touch points with us. And then the individual direct investor is the fastest growing cohort of investors in Canada. They are very digitally native. That group is the group where we would be with our ETFs directly competing with crypto platforms like Coinbase or somebody. Like in good, some of those they may go direct because it's just a different app on your phone and so on. But you know, I do think they still on balance prefer ETFs because they invest in more than just digital assets, and so it's easy to, you know, buy and sell our Bitcoin ETF and then buy and sell an S&P 500 ETF and move around the markets where they want. You know, I think it's so funny, right? Like crypto has been like the whole world flipped on its head. The younger direct investor cohort also are the most knowledgeable, right? Yeah. They tend to be the ones who have like, which is, you know, it's the opposite of like, well, I need to go into an advisor's office and have them tell me. And then they spoke to their chief economist and that's how they know things. Like this is the opposite ramp, which is cool because, you know, you go and you meet people and sometimes I'm at conferences and I'll bump into somebody and they're just a regular person. I was at Bitcoin Miami one year and I was lining up to get a book signed after one of the speakers had been speaking. And I started chatting with somebody who's behind me and they said, oh, you're from Evolve, as if Evolve was an internationally well-known company, which it isn't, or I hope it is. And I said, yeah. And they said, we own EBIT. And I said, oh, that's amazing. Nice to meet you. And they said, yeah, we're teachers. We live on Vancouver Island in British Columbia, and we own your Bitcoin ETF.
Amazing.
And there we were together. We had come from Canada, from different cities in Canada, go to Miami to talk about Bitcoin. And that just goes to show how grassroots this whole thing is. And so it's cool to have something relevant in the marketplace for people who are looking to invest and, you know, they'd put it in their retirement accounts. And it was very cool.
The other thing that's been great about it from my perspective, too, is I came from the institutional endowments and foundation space. And I really saw the rise of alternatives and these ever increasing allocations to private equity, venture capital specifically. But for retail investors and individuals, they've missed the wave. But crypto almost gives you a way to augment that 60-40 portfolio. And, you know, you can get some alternative exposure. Is that kind of where you see this heading? Is the 60-40 going to die one day?
Well, I think the 60-40 has always been a bit of a construct, but people start there. And it's a useful frame of reference because it's where all the textbooks kind of put you in as a starting point. And one of the slides that we have in our marketing that we use a lot is we did a study of what happens if you add Bitcoin to a 60-40 portfolio over the past 5 years, right? So basically, as long as you've been able to do it in an ETF, what would it have been like? How would it have changed your risk-adjusted returns? What's the Sharpe ratio, the Sortino ratio? of a 5% allocation or 10% allocation. And the numbers are undeniable in that it has improved your risk-adjusted returns. Now, it's improved your volatility as well. We show standard deviation and we say, listen, so you got to understand, it's been a rougher ride if you had 60-40 with 5% Bitcoin than if you just had 60-40. But if you did and you stayed on the ride, you're a much happier place today than you would have been if you hadn't had it. So something to consider. And then that conversation is really cool because then it leads into the portfolio construction conversation, which we love having that kind of conversation with our clients, because where to use it and how to use it as important or more important than what is it when you're talking about investment products. And so the key question there comes down to volatility, right? So anybody who's been in digital assets for even 5 minutes knows how famously volatile it is. I mean, last year, point to point, Bitcoin was up, I think, more than 100%. But along the way, it had some drawdowns that were 20 to 30%, depending on the trough over that chopping period it had after the US ETFs launched. There are a lot of people for whom that ride is only sustainable for their portfolio if they've got an allocation of less than 5%. Because the drawdown on any given monthly statement, they're looking at it saying, well, you know, I've lost or I'm up. So you have to size it to that. And like, but that's a really great conversation to be able to have once somebody says, I accept the fact that when I'm looking to build a diversified portfolio and my objectives are, you know, medium or long term, maybe I'm saving for retirement and I'm early in my career, or maybe I'm saving for my kid to go to university and the kid's, you know, he's only 2-3 years old. So I know I've got 15 years, so I'm going to put some money aside. And you can kind of take a look at that and say, I'm okay with volatility, but I'm not okay with all of it being volatile because maybe I can't sleep at night. And so, you know, but anyway, that's where I think we go with 60-40. And I think that the 60-40 construct is still very relevant and it's very helpful. And the comparison really became strong during the last 4 years, because equities and fixed income both sold off quite significantly in 2022. And so some of these concepts about portfolio construction were kind of shown to not be as robust during that market condition than people had been led to believe. Because, you know, for a lot of people, right, they started their career, I mean, I would say for everybody working today, started your career after the beginning of the fixed income bull market that started in 1982. So for a long time, those of us who are kind of over 40 years old learned a lot of lessons that came from things like just hold stocks for the long run and don't worry about fixed income, that's going to do well. And you had this kind of wind at your back. It's a more challenging environment today. Like, the world's changing, right? And so, but we got better tools. So, you know, but you have to be open-minded. And if you keep going back to what you learned when you did your finance training back in like the, you know, 1990s, you may struggle to kind of figure out where this stuff sits. But those are the conversations that I think people are having now.
On the 60-40 idea, and, you know, bringing the fact that you guys have got this amazing portfolio now, ETC, as you mentioned, you know, the 60-40 construct, which is what it is, and the idea of a Bitcoin allocation, a model allocation of 1% or 5% or maybe up to 10% has been well discussed over the last few years. But now we actually have, primarily from you guys, you know, there's only a handful of sort of like options in this respect, crypto portfolios. And of course, with XRP now being added to ETC and also Solana being in there as well, it can take the place of a singular asset allocation to a more conventional portfolio. Is the narrative a further reduction in volatility, or maybe a smoothing in the volatility by adding ETC to your conventional holdings, if you like? Or how do you frame it then? You know, because basically we have been on this track of 60-40 plus Bitcoin, or maybe Bitcoin and Ether. How do you sort of frame it if we're now having this full portfolio being added to your ordinary, if you like, holdings?
Yeah, so diversification always dampens volatility, because one thing will zig while another zags, and then you end up with kind of lower overall combined volatility for the portfolio. So it is good. And that expands the access, by the way, like, which may be where you're going with this comment, right? If we can find a way to combine more digital assets together in a way that has a lower volatility profile, then more people are going to be open to allocating, and you're going to extend the opportunity set more broadly and more widely. So I think that's very much the case. And then again, we're talking about a non-correlated asset class when you compare it to fixed income and when you compare it to equities. And this is something that people need a constant reminder on, because there have been periods in time, we all have lived through them, where there's been a strong bull market in equities and a strong bull market in digital assets at the same time. And then people said, aha, it's a tech stock, it's risk on. And then they just throw all of their kind of rules of thumb at it. And then they just say, well, I don't need it because I've gotten Microsoft. So I'm not to say anything bad about Microsoft, but they're not the same thing. And so what, again, kind of comes back to that whole, like, how do you add it to a portfolio and portfolio construction? Saying that what we're talking about here is we're talking about a return driver that is not correlated. So it has a, it has the ability to significantly improve the long-term outcomes. And you need to be thinking about it because it's available, it's liquid, it's regulated, it's all these things that we have now in these, in the formats that we have them. So I think we're opening that conversation for sure more and more every day.
Elliot, it's been awesome having you on, and thoroughly enjoyed getting your takes on all this. There's just, there's a lot more angles we could probably even go down, more rabbit holes, what have you, with regards to everything we've been discussing. But for the final wrap, perhaps maybe you could just share a little bit on what's the horizon with Evolve. What are some, you know, to the degree that you're comfortable with sharing, what are some things that you guys are working on, that you and the team, that you can kind of delve into right now and get us excited for?
I wish I could share the roadmap, but I can't, for, you know, hopefully understandable reasons. What I would say is, though, that we've seen this year a real resurgence in what we can build with digital assets. We launched levered Bitcoin, levered Ether, Solana, and then XRP. And so those are four new products that we've launched within digital assets. We did a couple of traditional asset products this year as well. But I think what we are seeing, maybe I could answer your question by pointing at what we think is the roadmap for the conditions that allow us to build more product in the future. And that's really been a change, mostly in the US, led by the US, in the regulatory framework and the people who are in charge of the regulations as it relates to digital assets. And so the new administration in the US is very pro-crypto. There's a crypto czar, David Sacks, who's working at the White House. They put in place pro-crypto administrators at the SEC and other places. That is providing people with the confidence that there's regulatory certainty. That, combined with the US ETF launch around Bitcoin last year, that was the biggest ETF launch of any ETF launch in the world. And once again, my congratulations to CF Benchmarks. I think you guys were the most widely used index provider for those products. And I couldn't think of anybody who deserves more success than you guys on that.
Really appreciate it.
It's caused there now to be institutional interest in digital assets. And so those are the signaling mechanisms for now more progress, right? And so we really were, after Bitcoin and Ethereum in 2021 in Canada, we went through this long period of time of nothing, right? And there was nothing anywhere else in the world. There was nothing more in Canada. There was a lot of wait and see. There was a lot of asking, how's it going, right? I mean, those funds, EBA and Ether, were subject to lots of review by our regulators, not because anything was going wrong, but they just wanted to really triple check because it's a brand new asset class. And they, every time they looked at it, it's like, well, this is great. Like, it's everything's working. They asked us, you know, one time they were like, there was a lot of volatility. Can you show us how your trading worked with the fund through the volatility? And it was a great thing to be asked, because then we were like, well, let me tell you about our reference rate. And because it's tied to the futures, we can always get the reference rate when we trade at that rate, which is our valuation point for our fund. So no slippage, doesn't matter. There's a lot of vol, I don't care. And look at how well engineered this stuff is. And so all of that stuff is coming together in terms of now proof that it works, with better regulatory clarity in the US, with institutionals waking up because the kinds of people they look to provide investments to them, the big US shops are doing so. This is so exciting to be here now, but we're early because it's still in the domain of the independent asset managers, more so than the established asset managers, at least in Canada. The digital assets tends to be more an Evolve thing than something that comes out of the big banks, for example. So, but we're early, but they're coming along. And I think it means we're going to see more products, more use of digital assets. Like, we still haven't seen, there's still a lot of stuff we haven't seen yet. Like, What about products where a digital asset is only one element of a portfolio and there are other things in there, right? Like that stuff, I think, is an obvious innovation that you know, we could see from somebody at some point. Because it's normalizing. It's not just there's this other shiny object over here. People are now normalizing it. So anyway, we're super pumped. There's lots and lots happening, and the future is bright for sure.
Brilliant. Elliot Johnson, CIO and COO of Evolve ETFs. We are so grateful for you for joining us. And please don't let it be another 4 years before you come back.
Anytime. Thanks for having me.
Brilliant. Thanks a lot, sir. Elliot Johnson, CIO and COO of Evolve ETFs. What an amazing conversation. I'm sure you'll agree. If you enjoyed it, we have 45 other episodes now, wherever you get your podcasts, for your listening and viewing pleasure. CFBenchmarks.com is where you need to go for our other content. After that, we'll see you again for another episode of CFB Talks Digital Assets. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for listening to CFB Talks Digital Assets. This recording is for informational purposes only and should not be considered investment advice.
This recording is not intended to persuade or incite you to buy or sell any financial products noted within, including but not limited to exchange-traded funds, mutual funds, equities, other instruments that reference any index provided by CF Benchmarks Limited, or crypto assets. Any commentary, interviews, and discussions are opinions only and should not be considered a personalized recommendation. Please contact your financial advisor or professional before making an investment decision.
Note, some of the underlying instruments cited within this recording may be restricted to certain customer categories in certain jurisdictions.
Published July 1st, 2025. Evolve Funds Group, Inc. is the investment fund manager and portfolio manager. All Evolve ETFs funds described herein is offered by Evolve Funds Group, Inc., and distributed through authorized dealers. The information contained herein is a general description and is not intended to be specific investment advice or a recommendation or solicitation to buy, sell, stake, or hold any crypto asset or engage in any specific strategy. You should not act or rely on the information contained herein without seeking the advice of an appropriate professional advisor. The information contained herein is intended for informational purposes as a summary only, does not constitute an offer to sell any securities or a legally binding obligation. It is qualified entirely by, and should be read in conjunction with, the more detailed information appearing in the prospectuses found on the Evolve Funds Group, Inc. website at evolveetfs.com. The unpredictable nature of the crypto assets can lead to loss of funds. Leverage increases risk. Commissions, trailing commissions, management fees, and expenses all may be associated with exchange-traded funds, ETFs, and mutual funds. Please read the prospectus before investing. ETFs and mutual funds are not guaranteed. Their values change frequently, and past performance may not be repeated. Certain information contained herein is obtained from third parties. Evolve Funds Group, Inc. believes such information to be accurate and reliable as of July 1, 2025. However, we cannot guarantee that it is accurate or complete or current at all times. The information provided is subject to change without notice. Certain statements contained herein are forward-looking. Forward-looking statements, FLS, are statements that are predictive in nature, depend upon or refer to future events or conditions, or that include words such as may, will, should, could, expect, anticipate, intend, plan, believe, or estimate, or other similar expressions. Statements that look forward in time or include anything other than historical information are subject to risks and uncertainties, and actual results, actions, or events could differ materially from those set forth in the FLS. FLS are not guarantees of future performance and are by their nature based on numerous assumptions. Although the FLS contained herein are based upon what Evolve Funds Group, Inc. and the portfolio manager believe to be reasonable assumptions, Neither Evolve Funds Group, Inc., nor the portfolio manager can assure that actual results will be consistent with these FLS. The reader is cautioned to consider the FLS carefully and not to place undue reliance on FLS. Unless required by applicable law, it is not undertaken and specifically disclaimed that there is any intention or obligation to update or revise FLS, whether as a result of new information, future events, or otherwise.